That's where we're going to start this morning. I do want to say welcome to our visitors. We're glad that you're here with us. And I think I'll be at this door today on the way out. If you happen to come by and see me, I'd love to hear where you're from, how you got to be with us, and what we can do to get you back. Because this is a loving church and a caring church, and we're a group of people that want to serve God. And we want to be a growing church as well. And so we would love to have you back with us. I would love to hear your comments, your thoughts about things we talk about this morning. If you have any questions, I'd love to hear those. I accept compliments. If you have any criticisms, Brother Guy will be at the other door. Please see him on the way out. If you're one of our members, I think most everybody has got their picture made for, our yearbook, for our directory. But we still have a few who have not got their picture made yet. If we could get your picture, that would be wonderful. Otherwise, we reserve the right to get one off of Facebook. That would be embarrassing. We don't want to do that. We don't want to selfie you in the directory. So we would love to get your picture. Well, I am excited about our topic this morning. And I hope you're excited about it because it's the topic that you chose. I gave you these four choices on Wednesday night. Spiritual shrugs was your first choice, or resentment, or do I know enough to become a Christian, or a journey through the Red Sea. And I've done this several times where we do the church's choice, and it's usually random how things are selected, but not this time. You know, the guys came up to me Wednesday night, and they looked at the list and said, oh, yeah, I don't really care. The spiritual shrugs or maybe a journey through the Red Sea, it doesn't really matter to me. But the women were united in one voice and said, we're talking about resentment on Sunday. So we're going to talk about that this morning. And some of you guys maybe need to think about that resentment a little bit. Does your wife have resentment for you? I'm just going to give a little advice. Maybe get up out of your recliner and pick up your socks and put those where they go and take the trash out. Not because she has to ask you to, but because you want to. Take her out to eat at her favorite restaurant. For once, it's not going to kill you. And while you're there, I might suggest that you apologize, Donnie, for three things. Everything you have failed to do, everything you started but did not finish, just like you always do, and then everything you did, but you didn't do it how she wanted it done, when she wanted it done, with a smile on your face. And if you do those things, maybe we can start to move past some of this resentment. I'm just saying I don't think we'll cover all of this in the 25 minutes this morning in the sermon. But we'll talk about this idea of resentment. What is resentment? I tell you what, it's not. It's not actually a word that's found in your King James, your New King James, or your American Standard Bible. This morning as we talk about resentment, but its effects are clearly seen throughout text, and that's what we'll talk about this morning. Resentment begins as the most passive reaction to anger, but left unchecked, it continues to grow into bitterness, into hostility, and the desire to lash back. And that's what we're going to talk about some this morning. Resentment is having ill feelings toward a person or an event that we see as unfair. That's what resentment is. How old is this problem? Well, you can go all the way back to Genesis chapter 4. It's a problem that's as old as Cain and Abel, isn't it? Genesis chapter 4 and verse 4, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And what happens then? Cain was very angry, verse 5. He was very angry. Why? This doesn't seem fair, right? It doesn't seem fair to me that God is happy with my brother's offering, but he's not happy with mine. And I resent that. And so I thought about using maybe Cain and Abel as our case study this morning as we talk about this topic. And I thought about using the prodigal's brother, and we're going to talk some about him. But as we consider this thought this morning, this topic of resentment, there's another man who I think perfectly fits what we're trying to study this morning. Unfortunately, this man's name is Ahithophel. And I know for the next 20 minutes I'm going to stumble over this name, Ahithophel. We'll see if I can make it through. But we're going to talk about this man, Ahithophel, and how resentment was really the fall of this man. Now, if you need to brush up on your history like I did, thinking about this man, who was Ahithophel, 1 Chronicles chapter 27 and verse 33, as David's installing his cabinet there to help him, Ahithophel was the counselor to the king. And I want to continue with this verse here. We're talking about King David. And Hushai, the Archite, was the king's friend. Now, if you're a young person, I hope you'll remember this. And we'll come back and just mention this briefly later on in the sermon. He appoints a friend. Isn't that interesting? He's appointing his cabinet, and you've got Ahithophel here, who is the counselor to the king, and yet he also appoints a friend. Again, we'll talk more about that. But Ahithophel is a counselor, but not just the counselor. He's one of the best advisors that David has. 2 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 23, the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one inquired of the word of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel regarded by both David and Absalom. So who is this man we're talking about? He's a counselor, but not just an advisor. He's one of the best advisors. He's a really smart guy. That's who we're talking about this morning. And now, Brad started the story for us there in chapter 15 where Absalom conspires to take over the throne from David. Do you remember that story? Do you remember Absalom? What do we remember about Absalom? He was a good-looking young man, wasn't he, Braden? Good-looking, strong, perfect from the tip of his feet to the top of his head where he had thick, beautiful, fabulous hair, which I'm a little resentful of myself. That's who this man was. But he also was clearly a great politician, as Brad read for us this morning. Several translations have different words, but for about 4 years, he sits out there at the gate. And people come in as they're coming into town for a judgment. And he's talking to them, hey, where are you from? What's your problem? What you got going on in life? Boy, you know, if I was the king, I'd help you. I would. So he's a great politician. And now, as you're trying to go into office, or you're conspiring to steal the throne from your father, what does every politician like to have, right? An endorsement. Well, what a great endorsement. If I get Ahithophel, that was verse 12 that Brad read for us there, 2 Samuel 15, verse 12, and Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor in the city of Giloa, while he was offering the sacrifices. I need this endorsement. I'm going to take the throne. I want my dad's best advisor. And he did. Ahithophel joins him. As we go down there to chapter 15, verse 31, now someone told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. He goes with him. Obviously, this endorsement would validate, you know, the reign of Absalom in the eyes of all the people. If you go down to the end of verse 12, again, back in chapter 15, now the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. You know, this makes sense for Absalom. I understand why he wants the throne. Who wouldn't want to be the king, right? So I understand why he's trying to take the throne from his dad. What I don't understand is this guy Ahithophel. You've already reached a place where you're the king's advisor. And now you want to go against that? You want to join up with this conspiracy? Why? Don't you already have status? I mean, this is a lateral move. Don't you already have power? Don't you already have influence? Aren't you David's friend? Why would you want to do this? That doesn't make any sense to me. What more does he want? Well, there's more to the story. And I think his motives become very clear when we combine just two verses. The first verse is in 2 Samuel chapter 23. There's a list of David's mighty men there in 2 Samuel chapter 23. And the end of that verse says, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel. Eliam, the son of Ahithophel. You remember Eliam? He's only mentioned one other place in the Bible. You remember where that is? You remember the night when David goes out on his roof and he sees a woman bathing? That's in 2 Samuel chapter 11. And verse 3 says, so David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, is this not Bathsheba? We always say, oh yeah, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. But the verse says, the daughter of Eliam. She is the daughter of Eliam. She is the granddaughter of Ahithophel. Well, now this picture is getting real clear, isn't it? Now his motives are becoming very clear to us. He's watched years ago. As David comes in, steals his granddaughter, kills her husband, takes her for his own. His great-grandchild dies as a result of David's sin. No, David has brought violence. He's brought destruction. He's brought shame and death on this family. And now it's time for some good old-fashioned payback. That's what this story is about. Resentment. The first thing I want to point out, if you're following along with the outline, resentment can feel justified. Resentment is never justified. Let me say that again. Resentment is never justified. Like murder is never justified. Or adultery is never justified. Resentment is never justified. But it can feel justified, right? That's because the sin of one person can cause resentment in another person. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 4, Solomon says this, "An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness in his bones." We shouldn't discount that small verse there, should we? She who shames him. How does she shame him? With sin. One spouse has shamed another spouse with sin. That spouse is embarrassed by the actions of the other one. And that embarrassment leads to resentment, doesn't it? It's rottenness in their bones. And this resentment can build up for years. A couple of quick history verses here, 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 2. We understand that Absalom was the third son born to David while he was at Hebron. And in the 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 4, David was 30 years old when he became king at Hebron. He reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah, which means Absalom could not have been more than 7 years old when David moved to Jerusalem. And it's shortly after that that this whole incident with Bathsheba takes place, and Ahithophel starts to feel these emotions of resentment building up inside him. Absalom's a young man, right? But now we've got to this part in our story. Absalom's a grown man, and Ahithophel's trying to help him take over his father's kingdom. It's been years building up. Now, here's where I'll go back to that story of the prodigal's brother. We all remember the story of the prodigal son, right? So he wants his father's inheritance while he's still living, while the father's still living. And so he takes it and he runs off to a country and he wastes it and he gets a feeling bad about it and he comes home and the father welcomes him back. We all know this story. I want to pick up now in verse 25 and let's talk about the older brother for just a second. Now his older brother was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and because he was received safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf." But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. Now, listen to these next two verses, how the conversation goes. So he answered and said to his father, "Lo, these many years I have been serving you. I have never transgressed the commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him." You think he's got any resentment? Look how it started. Lo, these many years. Resentment can build over time, can't it? Lo, these many years. Some people have trouble letting go of the past. This is a funny cartoon that I found. Here's a couple with the marriage counselor. She's taking notes, and the wife's talking, and she says, "And let me just tell you what he did on our honeymoon 25 years ago." She's held on to it for a little while, hasn't she? But resentment can actually remain for a lifetime. We kind of laugh at that and think, nobody would hold on to something for 25 years. Oh, yes, they would. Resentment can last a long time. And it ruins relationships. Resentment ruins relationships, even the closest of relationships. There's a couple of psalms I want us to look at. And most scholars believe that these two psalms are pointing specifically to the relationship between David and his chief counselor, his chief advisor, Ahithophel. In Psalm 41 and verse 9, David's talking about the enemies that are around him, and he says, "Even my close friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, he lifted up his heel against me." Chapter 55, starting in verse 12, For it is not an enemy who reproaches me, then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me, then I could hide myself from him. But it is you, a man, my equal, my companion, my familiar friend, we who had sweet fellowship together. You need to understand the relationship that these two men had. They were best of friends. They sat together. They ate together. They talked about deeply personal and important issues together as they tried to come to decisions on how to lead this kingdom. It ruined their relationship. And resentment can certainly ruin a marriage relationship. Have on there 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 3. This is another story that involves David. We're going to talk about a man and his wife. The man's name is Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. And the woman was intelligent and beautiful in appearance, but the man was harsh and evil in his dealings. And we know that he and David kind of butt heads, and David's coming to town to teach him a lesson. And Abigail finds out about it, and she goes out to meet him. She's going to go out to try to talk David out of, you know, harming her household. And so you get down to verse 25, and she says to David, please do not let my Lord pay attention to this worthless man. This what? This worthless man. She's talking about her husband. Think she resents him? He was harsh. He was evil. He was obnoxious. He was condescending. He was a drunk, if you read the story. Do you think she resents him for those things? Let me ask you this. You think she was happy when she married him? Or you think she thought, oh, this is the man of my dreams, right? It says she was beautiful. It says she was intelligent. It doesn't say she was happy. Do you think he changed her? Because I will tell you, resentment changes a person. Let's go back to this story here. Ahithophel is extremely smart. We've established that. Why would he want to put himself in direct conflict with David? A king, a military leader, a warrior. You know, David killed a lion, a bear, and a giant without a sword, without a spear, before he was probably the age that he could get a driver's license. He was one of the greatest warriors that ever lived. Why would you want to put yourself in direct conflict with that man? David was a killing machine. And you want to put yourself in conflict with him? And yet that's exactly what he does. Young people, I mentioned Hushai earlier. This is the moment when David goes to Hushai. And he tells Hushai, I want you to go and I want you to also advise Absalom for me. And then there in 2 Samuel 15, you get down to, verse 34, and he says, then you can thwart the counsel of Ahithophel for me. David realizes he's in conflict with this man. Resentment can make a very smart person act very foolishly, we can see from our story. But I'll tell you what else resentment can do. It can make a kind person mean. It can make a compassionate person turn very cold, and it can make a happy person turn very bitter. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 10, the heart knows its own bitterness, and a stranger does not share its joy. I want to ask you a question. Is it hard to recognize a bitter person? You have trouble when you meet somebody knowing if they're bitter or not? You know, one neat thing about my job is I get to meet a lot of people. And Matt and I will go out and we'll meet someone, and there are times, within 90 seconds of meeting a person, I realize this is not someone we want to work for. Not because they don't have a good job or you know, repairs that we can do or something that pays, but just their personality. This is a bitter person. This is someone who's looking for problems. I don't know that I want to work for this person. So I'll ask them, you know, what's your timeline for getting this done? Well, I'd really like to get this done in the next month. I got about 6 weeks worth of work scheduled. I don't think I can get in that time period. Let me recommend somebody to you. I'll send them a bus. It's not hard recognizing a bitter person, is it? Resentment changes a person. And resentment can grow more destructive with time. back to our story. Ahithophel wants revenge. So he goes and he counsels Absalom. And here's the first advice that he gives to him. Absalom asks him, hey, give your advice. What shall we do? And Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines. What's he telling him? Go steal his wives and make sure everybody knows about it. Wonder where he got that idea from. David, you stole his granddaughter. He wants payback. That's where he got that idea from. And Absalom does this very thing. And that's not enough. Doesn't satisfy him that we've stolen David's wives. It doesn't satisfy him that we've embarrassed him in front of the entire kingdom and everybody knows about it. 2 Samuel chapter 17, in the first verse, furthermore, Ahithophel said to Absalom, please let me choose 12,000 men that I may arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and exhausted and terrify him so that all the people who are with him will flee. Then, what's he going to do then? I will strike down the king alone. I'm going to kill him. Boy, that escalated, didn't it? That's what happens with resentment. It gets more and more and more destructive the longer you hold on to it. Satan is very eager to control all of us. That's what's said. If we go back to that story there in Genesis chapter 4, again of Cain and Abel, Cain was very angry and he looked dejected. In verse 6, so why are you so angry, the Lord asked Cain. Why do you look so dejected? You will be accepted if you do what is right, but if you refuse to do what is right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you. But you must subdue it and be its master. God's having this conversation here with Cain. He said, listen, you got some resentment. You better control that. It's going to escalate. You better control it before it controls you. The very next verse, he kills his brother. No, obviously he didn't have it under control, did he? It became more and more destructive. And resentment hurts the one who has it most of all. A quote that I kept coming across as I was doing, resentment is like drinking poison and waiting on the other person to die. That's what resentment is. What was the end for I told you I'd mess up that guy's name. Ahithophel. What's the end for him? Now, when Ahithophel saw that his advice was not followed, he saddled a donkey and arose and went home to his house, to his city. Then he put his household in order and hanged himself and died. That's a pretty sad end to that story, isn't it? I thought about this man. What was he thinking there at the end? What did he feel? I guess he just couldn't see the possibility that David could ever forgive him. Even though, being the chief advisor, he had watched David forgive Absalom some years earlier, he just couldn't see the possibility that David would ever forgive him. And, you know, maybe that's because he couldn't forgive David. That's how resentment is. He sees no other end. And for us as Christians, if we can't forgive, we really shouldn't expect forgiveness either. Isn't that exactly what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 15? But if you do not forgive others, then your Father will not forgive your transgressions. Aren't we supposed to forgive? If we're to have any hope of forgiveness, shouldn't we forgive other people? Job's friend Eliphaz warned, the Living Translation says this way in Job 5:2, surely resentment destroys the fool. Yes, it does. It hurts the one who has it most of all. And it won't matter how much you nurse a grudge, it won't get any better. If you're here this morning and you have a problem with resentment, if you don't take anything else that I say, please pay attention to these words of Solomon in this next verse. And I like the Good News Translation here. In Proverbs 19, verse 11, it says, if you are sensible, you will control your temper. When someone wrongs you, it is a great virtue to ignore it. Ignore it. He doesn't say hold on to it, bury it deep inside, let it grow over the years, and then lash out when you get a chance. He doesn't say that. He says it is a great virtue to ignore it. You're doing yourself a tremendous favor. As we conclude this morning, You are the only person you can change. The thing is, with resentment, we want the other person to change, don't we? We resent them for what they did or what they're doing, and we want them to change. It doesn't work that way. You are the only person you can change, and only you can change you. Resentment can be a lifetime wasted with regret and anger and a lifetime burden. Living Translation in Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 3 says, "A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but the resentment caused by a fool is even heavier." That is a lot of weight to carry around resentment. You know, you go see the doctor, and if you're like me, the doctor may say, "It wouldn't hurt you to lose a few pounds. You'd be a lot healthier if you lost a little of that unnecessary weight." Emotionally and spiritually, we need to lose some unnecessary weight. And that's exactly what resentment is. It's unnecessary weight. Are we willing to be the Lord's servants? Those who've been following along with the children's Bible puzzle already know this. But in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24, Paul says to Timothy that the Lord's servant is three things: kind to everyone, able to teach, and not resentful. Is that us? Resentment is a corrosive emotion that has no place in the Christian life. And maybe here's the better question. How can we who have been given so much have resentment in our hearts? We have to let it go, and we have to learn how to forgive. I appreciate your attention this morning. If you would, grab your songbook. We're going to sing an invitation song. And as we're closing and we're thinking about how much has been done for us, if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, have you considered how much has been done for you? The wages of sin is death. We all deserve death, and somebody else took that penalty for us, and that someone is Jesus Christ. Do you believe that? Why not have your sins washed away this morning? It's what baptism does. If we can help you with that, if we can help you with anything, we invite you to come.